This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
This week's parasha talks about how when the Ribbono Shel Olam took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, he didn't take them on the straight route directly out of Egypt into Eretz Yisrael, but he took them on a circuitous route through the Midbar Yamsuf. Okay, if you look at number one, Vayaseh Velekim Esam Derech HaMidbar Yamsuf, God took the nation through the Midbar, through the Yamsuf, in a circuitous route. Vachamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim. The Jewish people left the land of Egypt. Chamushim. Chamushim. What does it mean, chamushim? Weapons. Rashi says, Itai said, Rashi's pshat, that they came out armed. They came out armed. Mizuyanim, Rashi says, armed. Reuven is alluding to another dimension of this that we will get to. Okay, but let's try to discover a little bit. What does it mean they came out chamushim? They're holding the chumash, right? What does it mean? The chamushim. What does it mean? There is a fascinating comment by the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. Yonasan ben Uziel was one of the Tanoim, and besides for Targum Unklus, which was given at Har Sinai, there's another Targum, an authentic Targum, called Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. No, he's buried in Eretz Yisrael, Amuka, right? Mm-hmm. That's it's a skula, you go there for a shidduch. You need a shidduch, right? It's a big skula. You have to risk your life going up that mountain. If you make it up there and down, you know. Okay, so Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says, you know what it means? Vachamushim. Listen to this pshat, a new pshat. Look at number two. V'chol chad, every individual, imcham shotafla, with five children, saliku bnei Yisrael me'ara d'Mitzrayim. Every Jew went out of Mitzrayim with five children. Interesting. So, right, how do you say five in Hebrew? Right? Achat, shtayim, shalosh, arba, chamesh. Chamushim, what does it mean? Every family went out with five children. What does that mean, every family went out with five children? What does that mean? Every family had exactly five children? You know, what are the odds of that? Go into any Jewish neighborhood and take a poll of how many, you know, kids are in the families. I guarantee you there's not one neighborhood in the world where every single family has the same number of the household. It's impossible. So, but the Targum Yonasan says that Vachamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim, every family went out with five children.
The question then comes up, yeah. Are they their children?
Okay, good. We're going to try to see. So Itai said that, and Rashi says, Mizuyanim. That's one pshat. But the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel said they went out with five children. Now, if the Targum would have said six children, then we could have understood. Why? Because we know on the words in Parsha Shemos, of Bnei Yisrael paru, vayirbu, vayishutsu, vayirbu, Bnei Yisrael paru, vayishutsu, vayirbu, v'ma'od, ma'od, v'timal ha'aretz osam, we learn out from there that a woman, every woman that gave birth, she gave birth shisha bekaras echad, six and one, six in a shot. You know, it's a little scary, you know, six in a shot. But at least we have a basis for the idea that Klal Yisrael had many children at a time. That's what Chazal tell us, that every woman that gave birth to six at a time, shisha bekaras echad. But what does the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel mean when he says that every family went out vachamushim with five children? What does that mean? By the way, if you look in Parshas Bai, look at number 3, when it talks about when the Jews were actually leaving Ramses, and the Torah gives you a count of how many Jews left Ramses, Vayisu b'nei Yisrael me Ramses Sukkosa, the b'nei Yisrael traveled out of Ramses to Sukkos, how many? Kashesh meos elef ragli, shishim ribu, right? 600,000 men, Levad mitaf, besides the children. Now, how many children was it? How many children? Again, says the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Kesheish mea alfen gavraya, 600,000 men. Look at number 4. Bar mitafla, besides the children, chamsha l'chol gavra, 5 for each person.
Where do you get that?
information. Where did you get that idea?
So, okay, Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, he was an awesome person. He wanted to reveal the Targum on Ksuvim, and he was about to reveal it, and Israel, Eretz Yisrael, shook, started shaking. There was a major earthquake, the Gemara says, because the Targum on Ksuvim in Sefer Daniel, it says the date of when Mashiach will come, and when he was going to reveal the Targum on that, Eretz Yisrael was shaking. By the way, we're learning tonight, Lezecha Nishmas,
Asnat Bat Chafzi,
V'gam Baruch Ben Chafzi, the Nisham Shem Aliyah, should be a Melos Yosher for the whole Mishpacha, for all the children and grandchildren, Ad Bias Gael Tzadik. Okay. So where did he get this information from? A tradition from Har Sinai. Okay? But what is he saying? Every family left with five children? Why? Where? What? Why five? Why five? If anything, it should be six, but why five? Okay? Now we look at another Targum. Okay? There's something called Targum Unklus, Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, and Targum Yerushalmi. There's something called a Targum Yerushalmi, a third Targum. And he has another explanation what it means they left Mitzrayim Chamushim. You know what it means they left Mitzrayim Chamushim? Mizayonin be'oivada tava. They were armed with good deeds. Saliku b'nei Yisrael. The b'nei Yisrael left. Perikin me'ar the Mitzrayim loaded up from the land of Egypt. Another pshat in Chamushim. Mati said before, b'neshek, yeah, with ammunition. But what kind of ammunition? Ma'isim tovim, good deeds. They left Egypt armed with good deeds. Okay, so what does Chamushim mean according to the Targum Yerushalmi? They left Egypt with good deeds. Wait a second. They left Egypt with good deeds? What kind of good deeds? They had no good deeds. If you look in Sefer Yechezkel, and we say this every Pesach in the Haggadah, Ve'at Eirom Ve'aryah. You know what that means? Hashem looked at Klal Yisrael, they were naked and bare. What does that mean, naked and bare? Arumi mitzvot. They were empty, depleted from mitzvot. They had no mitzvot. The Mitzrayim, they had sunk to the 49th level of Tumah. Had they been there one more moment, they would have fallen to the point of no return. Right? They had no mitzvot. And that's why God had to give them the Karban Pesach and Dam Milah. So how could we say B'nai Yisrael left Mitzrayim armed with Ma'isim Tovim, like they were laden, they were completely loaded up with Ma'isim Tovim? They had no mitzvot. So let's just clarify for a moment. The pasuk says Chamushim alu bnei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim. They left Chamushim. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says it means every family left with five kids. So we asked, what? Every single family had five kids? It's impossible.
Maybe some had more.
Maybe, yeah. Just take statistically, is it possible for every family to have the same amount?
And the one of five go out from Mitzrayim.
Okay.
That's right.
In the beginning of the parasha.
Yeah.
Moshe said to Bnei Israel to borrow things from their neighbors.
Yeah.
So they took clothing and they took gold and they took whatever they need for the way, right? Maybe they meant for that, Chamushim Yatsu, because they had so much on them, plus whatever they had with their belongings.
And they had possessions.
Yeah.
Possessions.
They took so much stuff from their neighbors. They took it on a term of non-returning.
Permanent loan.
It's something like this. Yeah.
Okay. You know, and that could be included in Mizuyanim. That could be included in what Rashi says they left armed, maybe. But we want to know, how is it possible that every Jewish family left with five children? If anything, it should be six. And what does the Targum Yerushalmi mean that every Jew left loaded up with Ma'asim Tovim? They had no mitzvos. No, they had no mitzvahs. Okay. So, Reuven and Itai are saying that there's another pshat in Vachamushim. What is that? One-fifth of Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. What does that mean, one-fifth of Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim?
20%.
Rashi says that when God brought darkness onto the Mitzrayim, one of the purposes of it was because four-fifths of the Jewish people were supposed to perish. They weren't supposed to come out of Mitzrayim. They were not worthy to leave Mitzrayim. And God did not want the Egyptians to see that most of the Jewish people are perishing. So therefore he brought a plague of darkness, and the Egyptians in darkness did not see that most of the Jews were passing away. Okay.
Yeah, but where are they? They're passing and somebody have to bury them.
They're buried.
They're just like them.
They're buried,
the Egyptian,
I assume, in Egypt.
Lying on the street? No. At that moment when they...
The Jewish people buried them because for the Jews it was light.
They died in Egypt or they stayed in Egypt?
They died in Egypt. They died.
That night.
Mesu, they died. It was like a Holocaust. Think about it. It was 2.4 million men between the age of 20 and 60 passed away. In one night. Probably the greatest disaster in our history. That nobody even thinks about. Nobody even talks about.
Why did they pass away that night?
They were unworthy to come. We said most of the Jews were on a very low level in Egypt. They had sunk. These Jews also had no emunah that they would be redeemed. And they didn't make it out.
They didn't. The ones that made it out, they were worshipping idols.
So that we have to discuss.
But they didn't. They didn't have anything to go. I mean, Moshe came right way after that.
They didn't what?
Moshe Rabbeinu came way, like a couple hundred years after all they started, going and went through the Bolelut over there. You know, if you look 200-300 before that, when Abraham went down with the 70 of his people, and they become so many of them, and there were nobody to take after, like they didn't have any Torah back then.
No,
they didn't have any mitzvot back then. They didn't get, the Torah, Muhammad Har Sinai was way after they came out.
Yeah.
So what could bring them so low down, and what could actually save them from coming that low?
What brought them low down was their association with the Egyptian society.
But they didn't know any better, and they didn't have anybody tell them don't do that.
They had Levim. Okay, that's something to discuss.
Levim come after Moshe.
That's something we have to discuss. But again, this third explanation is Vachamushim Ala B'nei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim. It means 1/5 of the Jews left Egypt. The 4/5. Didn't make it out. Okay, that still doesn't explain where these children, why we're saying that every family brought out 5 children. And what does it mean they left with Ma'asim Tovim? Says the Sefer Be'er Yosef. The Be'er Yosef is written by Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Salant. He says an incredible thing. If 80% of the Jews, the Jewish men between 20 and 60, died in Egypt, who died? Did they die or did their whole family die? They died. The children, why should the children die? Because the parents don't have emunah, the children have to die? No. The children are not culpable for the sins of their parents. So that means even though 80% of the men passed away in Egypt,
only men or
80% of the children were left as orphans. 80% of the Jewish children were left as orphans. Out of every 5 children, 4 of them did not have a father and mother. Who brought those kids out of Mitzrayim? Who brought them out of Egypt? The 20%, the 1/5 that was left, besides taking their household, took another 4 children with them. These were the children of the 4/5 that didn't make it out. So when the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says that every family took 5 children, it doesn't literally mean 5 children, 5 households of children. Their household, and another 4 from the 4/5 that didn't make it out. Because what, they're going to be left in Egypt to assimilate and disappear and be killed by the Egyptians? So every Jew took it as his responsibility not only to take out his family, to take out the families of his brethren that didn't make it out of Egypt.
Maybe you could say that 1/5 that they came out of Mitzrayim, and the Hamushim meant that it's going to be on their shoulder to bring another... the rest of those ones who didn't make it through the time being in the desert.
What do you mean? To have more children for them?
For all those ones they lost, the 80% over there.
Oh, but the Pasuk says, V'chamushim olam neisam me'aretz Mitzrayim, they took them out with them. They took them out with them. So as the Jews were going, just imagine the scene. How many children did each family have? Who knows? They had 6 at a shot. So each family could have had 6, 12, 18, 60, who knows? But besides their own household, they schlepped the wrong 4 other households with them, But just picture, sometimes you go on a family trip, so you think, besides taking along your own family, maybe there's some kid, he could use a lift, he could use a nice time. You'll schlep him along with the family, give him a good time. Right? But that's when you know you're going to a good place. You're going, you know, you're going to Disneyland. You're going to a great adventure.
This is a great, big responsibility.
You take a big responsibility. It's a big achrayus and a big mitzvah, a big chesed. But imagine here, the Jewish people, they're not taking their family on some kind of chalamid outing. They're going into a barren desert with no food, no water, no hope for any type of natural survival. And yet they took it as a responsibility. You know, they could have said, it's enough, I have to worry about my own family. I have to worry about my brother's children.
What happened to the women, those spouses?
Okay, so that's unclear whether they passed away or not. Even if they didn't pass away, you need a father, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so they were like...
They were like the surrogate...
But the other question is the Shvatim. If they were under such a hard labor in Mitzrayim,
yeah.
How did they know that this child from this Shevet, because Shvatim, at the end, they were so organized, they knew exactly, and each Shevet had a flag and everything. So how was it under such a... falling in such a low level and everything, and all of a sudden they remembered which Shevet they were and where they belonged to. And those children, if they were taken by other families, and what was the condition to take them?
I mean, how is it clear what Shevet they belonged to? I don't know. But it's interesting that Rashi talks about that when they were marching by their tribe, so, you know, there was a lot of rumors, you know, like, who says this guy is from Shimon? Who says this guy is from Levi? You know, the Egyptians, if they abused us physically, who knows what they did to the wives? So it says that Hashem put his name on each Shevet, Shivtei Ka Edus L'Yisrael, as if to say, no, their lineage remained pure. So there was some type of divine way that they understood the purity of the lineage. But exactly how they know, you know, this baby came from this Shevet, I don't know. Can't tell you. We say the Navi Yirmiyah says, and we lay this every Rosh Hashanah, right? Koyamar Hashem, Zacharti Loch Chesed Neurayich. All right, I remember the kindness of your youth. Lechteich Acharei Bamidbar, that you followed me into the desert, Be'eretz Lo Zarua, into a barren land. So, what does that mean? God remembers the kindness of our youth. We always think it means that God looks back at when the Jewish people were young, and how the kindness that we showed God. That we followed him into a barren land without, you know, asking where are we going to eat, what are we going to have for supper, what are we going to have for lunch. But the word chesed is a little bit not the proper word. God remembers the chesed, the kindness. When we do a favor to God, you don't call that kindness. It should say God remembers our bitachon, the trust we had in him. No, but according to what we're saying, it's beautiful. God remembers the kindness of our youth. The kindness we showed to all the families of our brethren. When we left Egypt, not only did we take out our own families, we took care, every family took another four households with him. That's what the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel means in number two. V'cholchad imchamsho tafla slikum bnei yisom me'arad imitzrayim. Every family went out with five children. It doesn't literally mean five children, five households of children. Five households of children. So perhaps we could also suggest... And we know the Navi tells us that the future redemption will be a parallel of the redemption from Egypt. The way we left Mitzrayim, God will show us future miracles. And in our day and age, what percent of the Jewish people are really observant? We're lucky if it's a Chomesh. You know, it's not. You know? What else? What?
You don't think so? Not
20%? It's not even
10%.
I don't think...
Why you
can sell? It's less... Shomer Shabbos is less than 10%. Less than 10%. And if that's the case, who's going to take care of these other children? You know, if we're hoping for the Geula HaAsida, we're hoping for the final redemption, the one-fifth, the Chomesh, has to take it as their responsibility that if you want to finally leave the Galus... We have to take responsibility for the other four-fifths to make sure that these children also have the benefit of the upbringing and the derech of Judaism that we have. So this is the lesson. The same way when we left Mitzrayim, the one-fifth took responsibility for the rest of our people, nowadays also, if you're hoping for the Geula, the one-fifth has to kol chad imcham shetafli Yatsumi Mitzrayim. We have to be concerned for the other children, the other households of Kinderlach that don't have the opportunities that Baruch Hashem that we have. Okay, we move on. We move on to Oz Yashir. I'll tell you something incredible. Okay? all the Mefarshim jump on one word in the Shira. The word Uz. What does the word Uz mean?
Then.
Then. Uz Yashir. Then they sang. Yeah, really? Then? As opposed to... Whenever you do something, it's then. Anytime you do something. Every single pasuk in the Torah should start... Az bereishis bara lekem b'shemayim ha'aretz. Az v'ha'aretz az azavay. Az v'yedaber. Az means then. Of course it was then. It can't be whenever it happens. It's then.
In that particular moment. So that means before that and after that, they never sang.
They never sang this song. You know.
No, it says Az Yashir Moshe of Bnei Yisrael. They didn't have anything else. Whatever he said, that's what he said that particular time. But he didn't have anything before that.
Us.
The only time we have after this is was Levarach David. It's the same on the same level.
Oh, but no, there's a concept that there are 10 Shiros in history. 9 happened, and the 10th one will be when Mashiach comes. But what does Rashi say the word Uz mean? Take a look at number 7. The Rashi, listen to what Rashi says. Uz kishero hanes, when they saw the miracle, Allah belibay sheyashir. The thought entered their mind to sing. Okay, so Uz yashir means the following. When they sang, I'm sorry, when they saw the miracle, the thought of singing entered their mind. And then they sang. In other words, you know what it means, Az Yashir? Az, they saw the miracle, they saw Ra'a Hanes, they saw the miracle, and they decided to sing, and then they sang. In other words, we introduce Az Yashir, before we say they sang, we say they decided to sing.
Why they say Az Yashir as a singular, and not Az Yashiru Moshe Bnei Yisrael?
Okay, because we're saying Az Yashir Moshe, comma, so it's singular on Moshe, and then Ubnei Yisrael. So it's like, you put a comma. Yeah, the trup, Az Yashir Moshe, that's like a comma in musical notes.
Depending on what type of tune you put. When you read it as a passage, it says, Az Yashir Moshe Ubnei Yisrael, Az Yashiru, as a plural, everybody.
Okay, that's...
When you read a pasuk, you don't sing it as a song, you read it as a pasuk, as a whole sentence, right?
Yeah, but the musical notes are very important. They're not just a melody, but the musical notes teach you really how to break up the words. And we're going to see something very interesting about the trap. We're going to come to something very interesting about the trap. But Rashi's telling us over here that as an introduction to the Shira, the Torah is telling you, they saw the miracle, they decided to sing, and they sang. Now, could somebody please tell me why it's necessary for the Torah to tell me before they sang that they decided to sing? Before you do anything, you decide to do it. You can't do anything without deciding to do it. Let's say, we say, Oren came to... First, Oren decided to come tonight, and Oren came. Well, we know if you came, you decided to come, right? You can't come without deciding to come. You don't mind them picking on you, right?
What if I was walking in my sleep?
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
It says here in Rashi that after he saw the nest,
yeah,
he starts singing.
Yeah.
What happened to all the other nesim before?
They didn't sing Shira. They didn't sing Shira.
Maybe it was not considered as a nest for them? Or maybe they didn't take it as a...
This is also a whole topic. This is a whole topic. Why they waited until now to sing. But why does the Torah have to introduce the Shira that they decided to sing? It's obvious. You can't do anything without deciding, right? Every word of the Torah is very purposeful. So if the Torah says they sang a song, we know on our own they decided to sing it. You don't need to say, Az Yashir, they decided to sing and they sang. Obviously, if you're going to sing, they decided to sing.
I mean, because of the action, maybe as they were entering the sea.
Yeah.
The decision was enter the sea and with a song.
No, but the song came after the...
Az Yashir, according to Rashi, means when they saw the miracle, they decided to sing. And then the Torah goes on to tell us what they sang. But, why is that important information that before they sang, they decided to? Nobody does anything.
It cannot be that they sang before they went to cross the water.
No.
Sang it after they came
after,
out of the water.
After.
They sang it after they came out. Because if you understand the words of the song, Everything they say, it was...
Yeah, Yisrael, Asayor HaGdoyla, Asher Osa, Hashem B'Mitzrayim, V'Yam, afterwards, when they saw,
V'Yar,
Es Mitzrayim, Meis Al Sfas Hayam, right? Yeah. They saw the Egyptians dead. That's when they sang.
When they came out, they saw them. They didn't see them while they were there.
Yeah. Because, or to answer your question before, why they waited till now? Because Ashira Lashem ki gam alala. You only sing Shira upon the conclusion of the miracle, and this is the conclusion. Okay. So here's the question. Here's our question: is why?
Yeah. They did not cross the sea. They just went like in circles, right? So that's another.
They crossed. They crossed, but they may have crossed in a circuitous route.
Went from one side to the other, or yeah. They just went in circles.
No, they went from one side to the other.
You know, regarding what you said, I heard like it from a couple of different places.
Yeah.
That one time they crossed, they went back, and then they crossed the other side. Like three times they crossed.
I'm not, I don't know.
I don't know when...
I don't know. I know it wasn't a straight route, it was a circuitous route. But any event here, let's...
Yamsuf is a very narrow Yamsuf, you know,
there are different parts. There are different parts of the Yamsuf. Different parts. There are different parts. Some are.
We all assume they crossed across from the across of the Sinai Peninsula. They didn't go where Sudan was because Egypt wasn't there.
They went in the south. The Yamsuf, according to Rashi, is on the southeast and southwest border of Eretz Israel. It's both. So the whole bodily of water.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Red Sea.
Yeah.
It's very narrow. It's not like crossing the ocean or something. It could call it a big river.
Okay. Yeah, we had the size of it at that point in history. I don't know. Okay, hear me out because we have a lot of information to do. Hayom, katsav hamalacham ruba. A lot to do here. So here's the question. Why is it necessary for the Torah to tell me that they decided to sing before they sang? Listen to what the Shem Yishmuel says. Shem Yishmuel was the Rebbe of Sachachav. My family descends from, hails from Sachachav. So my grandmother actually saw the Shem Yishmuel. When she was a young girl, she saw the Shem Yishmuel. So listen to what he says.
So you're Ruski?
Polish. So he says like this. How is it possible, right? Rabbi Yisai, I'm going to tell you the following. We're very happy that we're in shul tonight, so let's all sing, okay? Now, what are the chances that everyone is going to sing the same song? It's impossible. You're going to sing your song, I'm going to sing my song. Even if we sing the same song, it's going to be with different words. And yet here, 600,000 Jews agreed to make one song, not with Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Sfarad, Havara Sfarad, you know, one song with the same words. How is it possible? Every Jew sang the same words? It's impossible. So you'll say, well, this wasn't a regular song. This was prophecy, right? Because we know every Jew reached levels of nevuah, prophetic levels. It says, Masharo Shivcha Alayam, that which even a maidservant saw at the sea, Lo Ra'a Yechezkel Ben Buzi, even Yechezkel never was able to see. So this wasn't just an ordinary song. They had a prophetic vision, and they sang. So God gave them the prophecy. But even that doesn't explain how they could have each said the same word. Because there's a rule in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ein shnei neviim esnavim b'signon echad, which means if you have two prophets and they get the exact same vision, the two prophets will not come out with the exact same words. One prophet will say it his way, another prophet will say it his way. They'll get the basic message right, but the words will be completely different. And if that's the case, how could 600,000 prophets say the exact same prophetic song? It's impossible. If even two prophets will not come out with the same words, how could 600,000 prophets come out with the same words? Another question. The Gemara tells us that not only did the men and the women and the children sing Shira, but even the babies, the embryos in their mother's stomach, they also sang Shira. Afilu ubarim shebemei iman omrim Shira. Even the embryos in their mother's womb, they also sang Shira. We learn that of a pasuk, b'makelos baruchu Elokim. Even the congregations of children, of babies, of embryos in their mother's womb sang Shira. Somebody tell me, could an embryo talk? No. So you say, oh, come on, you know, what kind of question is that? This was prophecy. Doesn't matter. There was a Navi by the name of Amos. You know why he was called Amos? His mouth was Amos, was clogged up. He had a lisp. He couldn't say the letter Shin. So when God told him to say the word Boilesh, he said Boilesh. He couldn't say the Shin. Well, why not? He's a prophet. God's giving him prophecy, so shouldn't he be speaking clearly? It doesn't matter whether you're a prophet or not a prophet. If you don't have a mouth, you can't say the prophecy. So if even someone with a lisp The lisp affects his prophecy. So imagine an embryo who can't even talk. How's he supposed to say prophecy? How's a baby, how's the embryo in his mother's womb supposed to sing Shira? Ashir Lashem ki ga'oi ga'oi. He can't talk. He can't talk. Says Hashem Yishmuel, there was one prophet, despite the fact that he had a problem speaking, spoke very clearly. Who was that?
Moshe.
Now, we've given various interpretations in the last couple of weeks why that was so. But one fundamental interpretation of why, even though Moshe was kfad peh, kfad lashon, he was a stutterer, he spoke very heavily, why he was able to speak clearly, it's because his nevuah wasn't that God gave him a picture and then he said over his interpretation. Shechina midaberes mitoch grono shel Moshe. God spoke out of his voice box. He wasn't talking. When he taught Torah to Klal Yisrael, he wasn't talking. It was God talking out of his throat. In fact, the Vilna Gaon says, that's why God made him a stutterer and difficult for him to speak, so that it would be clear that when he would teach Torah to Klal Yisrael, it wasn't him talking, it was Ribbono Shel Olam talking. Because they see this man can talk, and yet when he's teaching Torah, he's the most articulate speaker of all time. It must be they realize that it wasn't him, it was God.
So he was speaking, God was speaking from his throat, yes, only when he was saying the Nevuot.
Correct.
But what happened while the time that
he was schmoozing with his friend?
No schmoozing, but he was going down
to Paro?
Every time he went to Paro, God spoke for him, right?
When he taught Torah, God spoke to him. When he spoke to Paro,
Okay, but what happened the 40 years in the desert? He had to be a judge, he had to be, the person who move over there, it doesn't work that way.
Stay tuned. So again, why did Moshe Rabbeinu, why was he able to speak even though he had a problem speaking? Because it wasn't him, it was God speaking through his voice box. Now, how about the Navi Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, Yeshaya? When they said prophecy, God wasn't talking out of their voice box. God gave them the image and they relayed the information. The Gemara says, the difference between Moshe and other Nevi'im is when other Nevi'im prophesied, they said the following, Ko Amar Hashem. Right? Like Yirmiyah. Ko Amar Hashem. What does Ko mean? Or Ko? What does Kaf Chaf He? Ko Amar Hashem? This is basically what God says. About. Moshe Rabbeinu never said Ko Amar Hashem. What did he say? This. But it's not precise. Yes. Kach is different than Ko. Ko is this, but not in a precise term. How do you say precisely? Whenever Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, he said, Zeh Hadavar, Zeh. This, exactly.
But many times also said, Vayomer Hashem leMoshe.
Yeah, but when he said over to the people, he doesn't say Ko, it's always Zeh, okay? When the Jewish people were crossing the Yam Suf and they were singing Shira, what did they say? Zeh Kei Livian Vehu, this is my God and I'll glorify Him. They said Zeh, like Moshe Rabbeinu. That means their prophecy wasn't God showed them an image and they interpreted it. God put the words in their mouth when they sang the Shira. That's why every single Jew came up with the exact same Shira. Because it wasn't a vision that they got that they had to interpret. Otherwise they never would have come up with the same interpretation. It was God put the words of the Shira into their mouths, like Moshe Rabbeinu. And the proof is they said, Zeh! You want to know how the babies in their mother's womb could sing Shira even though they don't have the faculty of speech? Because it wasn't a regular prophecy. It was God putting the words into their mouth. So you'll ask, if God put the words into their mouth, so why are we giving credit to the Jewish people for singing this song? What did they do? They didn't do anything. They just walked through the desert and God put the words in their mouth. Therefore, how does the Shira start? Az Yashir? The Torah is telling you they decided to sing. In other words, why are we giving credit to them? It was for their decision to sing. Once they decided, God put the words in their mouth. But the reason why this song is attributed to them is because they had the inspiration and the desire to sing. That's why it belongs to them. Not because they did it, because they decided to do it. That's why the Torah makes it its business to say, before they sang, they decided to do it, because that was their only participation in the song. The rest of it, God put directly into their mouth. Okay. Okay, we have a few more moments. We're going to skip to the end of the parsha, briefly. And we go to number 11, the Vilna Gaon. Take a look at number 11. The end of the parasha talks about the war against Amalek. So Amalek attacks the Jewish people. And what happens? God tells Moshe, we got to wipe these guys out, right? By the way, very interesting. God took an oath. Ki yad al kes ka. Ki yad al kes ka. Yad, right? God raises his hand. Ki yad. He takes his hand. He swears al kes by the throne, like kisei, ka of God, that his name is not complete until Amalek is wiped out. Okay, so he actually, Rashi says, God's throne is not a kisei, it's a case. So long as Amalek is around, his throne is incomplete, and it's ka, yud-hei, but we don't. The other two letters are not there because God's name is also incomplete until Amalek is wiped out. By the way, that's why it says, ki bachar Hashem b'tzion. When God will choose Tzion, what's the next word? Iva lemoshavlo. He desired that Tzion should be his habitation. Iva. How do you spell Iva? Aleph, Vav, He. Then when God brings Mashiach to Tzion, Aleph will be restored to the case to make Kisei, and the Vav, He will be restored to the Yud, and then the He to restore the throne and Hashem's name. Okay, but that's a side point. So Hashem says to Yoshua, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu the following. Look at number 11. Vayom Hashem al Moshe, God says to Moshe, Kisov zos zikaron basefer. Write this as a remembrance in the book, V'sim b'yozne Yehoshua, and put it into the ears of Yehoshua, ki macho emcha es zecher Amalek, that I will obliterate the remembrance of Amalek. So Hashem instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to do two things. First of all, to write in the Torah to destroy Amalek, and to tell Yeshua orally that he has to destroy Amalek.
But he didn't say when.
Whenever he can, as soon as he can.
Rabbi, what do they mean by destroy Amalek? What does that mean?
To kill.
Isn't that genocide?
That's a good question.
Today is a genocide. Back then it was not.
Always was.
Why? Amalek was one person.
It was in war. They attacked us. It was out of...
So the war is over. Now they move on. Why do we need to kill them now?
We don't know who is Amalek now.
Today?
Or whatever.
We'll discuss it privately, okay? We'll discuss it.
How about us?
What?
How about us?
At today?
We want to know that too. You say we're in private.
Yeah, everyone's invited. Okay, let me ask you a question. Here God tells Moshe two things. The first thing is, write in the Torah to destroy Amalek, and the second thing is to tell Yehoshua orally. K'sov zo sukaron ba'sefer, that's write the Torah, and tell him orally, Torah Shebaal Peh. Once you're showing Yeshua in the Torah that he's got to destroy Amalek, why is it important to tell him orally also? He sees it in front of him, you know. He has the information, or you have to tell him orally. Once Moshe Rabbeinu writes in the Torah that he has to destroy Amalek, so why does he have to go and orally tell Yeshua, by the way, you have to destroy Amalek? It says it right here, black and white. Okay. In the times of David HaMelech went to his general and he told his general, Yoav ben Tzruya, Yoav, you got to destroy Amalek. And Yoav went and he killed out Amalek. The only thing is he only killed the Zecharim and not the Nekevos. So David said, what's going on? It says, Timcha es Zechar Amalek. He said, yeah, my Rebbe told me, Timcha es Zachar Amalek, the males. David said, no, you don't read it, Timcha es Zachar Amalek, it's Timcha es Zechar, the remembrance. You have to obliterate them completely, men, women, and children. So he said, he made a mistake. So in other words, when it comes to destroying Amalek, it's not enough that it says it black and white in the Torah, Timcha es Zechar Amalek, you have to have the oral interpretation also, which means the Nekudos, the way it's read.
How come he did this mistake? We knew that Shmuel fell, Saul fell with this
obligation. How can we repeat the same
step? Yoav? Yeah. Yoav? His Rebbe, it's a machlokas in the Gemara, whether the Rebbe taught him incorrectly, or the Rebbe taught him correctly. But the obligation of the Rebbe is not just to teach, but to make sure the students understood. And apparently,
he didn't understand.
And he made a misinterpretation. He made a misinterpretation. So when it comes to destroying Amalek, the Torah doesn't just say, Kisov Zosu Karon Basefer, to write it in the Chumash. But you have to make sure, V'sim Ba'azne Yehoshua, you have to tell Yehoshua orally. Because if you don't have the oral interpretation of what it means to destroy Amalek, then you may make the mistake of Yoav, that it's only the males and not the females. That's why the Torah says specifically, the Simba Azne Yehoshua, that's not just a written interpretation, it's also an oral interpretation.
Whatever you read, you need to also to understand. Somebody needs to teach you that verbally.
Yeah, whatever. Someone has to teach you, and the teacher has to make sure that the student understands it. Because ultimately, it will be the responsibility of the teacher if the student makes a mistake. Okay? Shkayach.
The hook if you didn't understand it.
Shkayach. Okay. Continuing with Parashas B'Shalach, just we'll add 2 points for those who are kind enough to stay a little bit extra. Chazal tell us, and it's actually a Gemara, the idea that what a maidservant was able to see at the Yam, at the sea, even the great Nevi'im, as Yechezkel ben Buzi, did not see. In other words, when they crossed the sea and they sang Shira to Hashem, it was such a divine revelation, and they saw God so clearly, even more clear than when the prophets saw Hashem. Even when Yechezkel, Ma'aseh Merkava, right? Ezekiel, his
vision saw actually face to face with God. It was only Moshe.
But whatever the prophets were able to visualize, the Jewish people crossing the sea saw even more clearly. Not only the Jewish people, but even a shivcha, a maidservant, that even she saw more clearly, even a lowly maidservant, even the goita, you know. Every Jewish family has to have a cleaning lady, otherwise, you know. So even the cleaning lady reached a higher level.
She was able to see.
Of God, of revelation.
She reached a higher level. She saw more.
Momentarily, right. Momentarily she saw more. By the way, the Rambam has a small kuntras. The Rambam has a very small work called Igeres Hashmad, the letter of Matrodom, giving up your life, Akedesh Hashem. And he has a completely different interpretation of this statement of Chazal. It doesn't mean the Goita saw more than Yechezkel. Shivcha means every Jewish woman. What do you think the Jewish woman was in Mitzrayim? She was a Shivcha. So when it says what every Shivcha saw, even Yechezkel didn't see, the Shivcha doesn't mean the Egyptian cleaning lady that you took out of Mitzrayim. It means every Jewish woman was a Shivcha in Mitzrayim. But in any event, that's not the simple interpretation of the Chazal.
They took their servant from Egypt too?
Yeah, the Goita, you know. You left with silver, gold. But beside that, apparently, you know, you took, the cleaning lady, the Goita, the Shifcha.
I thought the Erev Rav was those people who wanted to leave Egypt because they didn't want to stay with Paro or something. I didn't know they were cleaning
ladies. Yeah.
Because they said that the Jewish people were not only the nation that were under the rule of Paro. The other nation also, who came to get their food, they also got stuck there and they couldn't leave.
Oh, you mean so the other peoples
other
left
peoples
Egypt?
Also, yes,
perhaps.
They stayed there and then they went.
So they also left.
So what is actually referring to Erev Rav?
The Erev Rav is a mixture of, I believe, Egyptians who wanted to join the Jewish people.
So it's not referring to non-Jews, they were like servants or something like that.
Maybe these non-Jews played a role as servants.
See, we have the Erev Rav in our day too, also.
Certainly.
One of the Jews from Russia, they come to Israel. And they say, oh, my grandmother was Jew. And they come to get all the benefits because they have no life over there.
Every generation has its Erev Rav.
The last 3 years, Israel deported over 700,000 of them.
Really?
Sure. 700,000?
700,000 of the Russian claim to be Jew, they deported.
Okay, so in any event, how do we see from this pasuk that even what a shivcha saw on the Yam, the Nevi'im did not see? Where do Chazal derive it from this pasuk? How do they see in the Shira? Where is there any allusion to the fact that even a shivcha saw more clearly than Yechezkel ben Buzi? Where is it alluded to? So the Vilna Gaon says, What words do they say this on? The words, Zeh keli v'yanvehu, this is my God, I will glorify him. Elokei, it's Pasuk Beis. Elokei avi, the God of my father, va'arom emenhu, and I will exalt him. Okay, Zeh keli, this is my God, v'anvehu, elokei avi, the God of my fathers. Who is saying the words, Elokei avi, the God of my father?
Bnei Israel.
A Shivcha cannot possibly be saying those words because she can't say the God of my fathers. She's not Jewish. Maybe it's her God because she's converting, but she can't say Elokei Avi.
Why she cannot say it?
Because it's not...
This could be also Avram Avinu because he was also non-Jew. And,
but her father, Elokei Avi, that's why Chazal tell us that when you bring Bikurim in Eretz Yisrael, a ger could bring Bikurim, but cannot be Kore. There's an idea that when you bring Bikurim, you have to read a certain parasha in the Torah. So a ger brings a Bikurim, but he's not Kore. Because when you're Kore, you read the parasha, you have to say, God brought me to the land, Asher Nishba La'avoseinu, that he swore to our forefathers. And the ger, this is not their ancestral land. So therefore, if in the Shira it says, Elokei Aviv Arom Emenu, the God of my fathers, and that was said by the Bnei Yisrael, so why is the first part of the pasuk saying Zeh Keli? This is my God. Who's saying that? It must be somebody who's not able to say Elokei Avi, the God of my fathers. It must be the first half of the sentence was stated by the Gerim, the Shvachos.
So what happened to Bnei Gerim?
And I'm saying the second half was said by Bnei Israel. So what did the Shivcha say? Zeh. The Nevi'im couldn't even say that. The Nevi'im said, Ko, right? Remember, the Nevi'im said, Ko Amar Hashem. The Shivcha said, Zeh Keli. So that's how we learn that a Shivcha was able to see even what the Nevi'im were not able to see. Because the first half of the statement obviously is from the Shvachot. And they said, Zeh. Even only Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say, Zeh. And that's greater than all the Nevi'im. Yeah.
Let me understand something now. Everybody that crossed the sea said, Zeh Li.
That's what I would assume. That everyone said Zeh Keli, but Elokei Avi, that was only said by...
Including Korach?
Everybody, including Korach, yeah. Including Korach, he's a good guy, he's a tzayin.
Korach was a good guy, he wasn't bad.
I didn't say he was bad, but he came in with all the... Korach had all this Erev Rav coming
out. Banim Tzadikim,
yeah.
So what happened to Bnei Gerim? If the Ger says Elokei Avi, he cannot say Ger, because it's not Elokei Avi. But the Bnei Ger,
yes.
They could say it because after the conversion,
yeah, he have a Jewish father.
But Ger is not considered a Jew.
A Ger himself, he's Jewish, but a Kohen can't marry a Ger. Okay, one thing that we're going to end off with. It's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it's good to know. Okay, and it's. Some of the laws of Hebrew grammar. Something very important. Okay? If you notice in Megillas Esther, you look at the name Mordechai. Oh!
Yeah, it's me.
That's perfect.
Mordechai.
Is it Mordechai or Mordechai?
Mordechai.
What's the...
It depends. You see,
It depends.
Persians, the way they pronounce, because it's Iranian name.
Officially, in the Hebrew language, is it with a patach or a kamas? It depends where. What does it depend on? If it's in middle of a sentence, it's Mordechai. If it's at the end of the pasuk or at asnachta, it's Mordechai. Vayavor Mordechai. Whenever there's a stopping point, it's kamas. Whenever it's in the middle of the sentence, it's a patach. That's a law in Hebrew grammar, that whenever you have a word that's in the middle of a sentence, let's say the word tachas, if it's in the middle of a sentence, mitachas hashamayim, tachas. Mitochas, if it's the end of a sentence, or by an esnachta, you know what the esnachta is? It's a musical note in the middle of the... It's the upside down... goalpost. You know, it's the upside down... So whenever you have an esnachta, it's a kamat. In Hebrew, it always goes like that. Achas, but if it's by Islam, acha. It's always kamat, always denotes that it's the end of a phrase. Either asnachta or a sof pasuk.
But this doesn't change the meaning of the word.
Doesn't change the meaning of the word.
A lot of people, the way they pronounce, they change the meaning of the word. if you have the, if you change the dots.
It depends. In some cases, yes.
You
some,
change the meaning of the word.
Sometimes, yeah. 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 Now, if you look at number 10, we'll end off with this. It talks about when the people left over the man. Moshe says, don't leave over the man. If you leave it over, it's going to spoil. It's going to spoil. And sure enough, they left it over. It spoiled. It got wormy. Take a look at number 10. The Parshas Haman Kasuv. In the Parsha of the Man, it's written. By the way, what I'm about to present to you from number 10 is from the Chidushim, the novella of Reb Shlomo Halevi Landau, who was the second greatest student of the Vilna Gaon after Reb Chaim Volozhiner. And this is the only Chidush that is known from this Gadol. And it is not published in any sefer. It is published in a journal. And I once saw this a number of years ago. I was able to find it for the shir. This is the only... It's not published in any sefer. It's published in one journal, in the Yeshurun Journal, from a number of years ago.
Why didn't he publish it? They were against him?
No, no. This is the only thing we have left over from him. This is the only chidush that we have left over from him. Look what he says. The Parshas Haman Kosev, in the Parshas of the Man, it's written, Vayosiru Anosha Mimenu Ad Boker. The men left over until the morning. Vayarum Toloim Vayivash. It got wormy and it got spoiled. V'nirshem al zeh, and I'll just tell you, if you look in the Torah and you'll pay attention to laning this week, is the word pronounced vayivash or vayivash? And it's vayivash. Vayivash. And really it shouldn't be. It should be, it's an asnachta, it's a, at the end of a phrase, it should be vayivash. Okay. But for some reason our tradition is it's vayivash. You know, what's the big deal, a patach or a kamat? But that's a, we have a strong, we know from Sinai, it's a patach.
Okay, but the meaning of the word vayivash,
no
if you take the aleph, it's meaning dry. If you leave the aleph, it gets green, you know how, moldy.
That's what the word means, moldy, to spoil. But either whether it's a vash with an a patach or a kamatz, it means the exact same thing. But our tradition is that even though it appears at an asnachta, and whenever something appears at an asnachta, it's a kamatz, this is an exception. Why? I'll ask you another question. Later on the Torah, let me ask you something. When something spoils and it gets wormy, what's the process? What comes first, the worms or the spoilage?
Spoilage.
First it spoils, and then the worms come. And this pasuk, what does it say? Vayarum tola'im vayivash. First came the worms, and then it spoiled. That's not the normal thing. The worms don't come until after it spoils. And in fact, later on, when it talks about how they didn't leave over the man, it says, it didn't spoil and there were no worms. That's a precise order. But for some reason, says Rashi, this is called a mikra hafuch. It's an inverted pasuk. It is. It's out of order. It's out of order.
Somebody misprinted.
No. Our tradition is, first comes the words vayarom tolaim, and then vayivash. Really, first should come vayivash, and then vayarom tolaim. But we, says Reb Shlomo Halevi Landau, that is why our tradition is that the word vayivash is a patach, to indicate that really it should have been the other way around, and to indicate this is really not the end of a phrase. Really, vayivash should have come first, and vayaram tolaim should have been before the esnachta, should have been the end of the phrase. So therefore, even though the words are inverted, but we pronounce it with a patach to indicate that it's really not the end of the phrase, really it deserves to be before.
But it's not always right... the process of spoilage with the worms, the way we said. Many times we buy fruits and yeah, they're not spoiled and there's worms inside.
Those are, you know, the...
And they are very... Like you get the figs, they have that.
That's true.
Oranges have it and they're very nice and warm.
But that's
and
not the worms that come in because they're spoiled. That's worm that lives inside.
Right, right.
Because they're going to eat it. They're not developed from the rotting process.
Right.
You don't know where the worms come from.
It's like think about it, like you have a meat. In the meat you don't have the worms, but if you're going to leave it, a worm will come over there when it gets rotted.
They get attracted.
Yeah, you could have.
The worms does not come out from the meat. It comes from the outside to the meat. The meat doesn't turn into a worm, right?
Okay. Well, now you know, scientists used to believe in spontaneous generation. But you know, I don't think they don't accept that anymore exactly. Even though the Gemara, there's a whole discussion. The Gemara, what to talk about. But in any event, the reason why this is, it's interesting to know that there is a rule. Whenever something's the end of a phrase, it's a kamatz, in the middle of the phrase, it's a patach. And the reason why it doesn't apply over here is to indicate that these words really should have been flipped around. Why did the Torah flip it around out of order? Because what does it say at the end of the pasuk? The men left it over until the morning. It got wormy. It spoiled. And Moshe got angry. Now, why did Moshe get angry? Because they left it over. How did Moshe know they left it over? Moshe saw the worms. How do you see the worms? It was in a closed container. But Moshe knew it spoiled. You know why? He smelled it. So in order to juxtapose that Moshe got angry, they wanted to, the Torah wanted to put it, it got Vayivash, it's spoiled, Vayiksof Moshe, and Moshe got angry, because the Vayivash is what caused Moshe to get angry. So even though it wasn't in the correct order, we put Vayivash next to Vayiksof Alehem Moshe. In other words, the real order was, first it spoiled, then it got wormy. But since we wanted to explain, why did Moshe get angry? Moshe got angry because it spoiled. So we put it like that. But just it's an interesting thing. It's a rare exception. It's a rare exception. Whenever something's at the end of a phrase, it's a kamatz. Whenever it's in the middle of the phrase, it's a patach. And the one exception, there's a whole explanation for why the Torah... By the way, every nekuda... Remember we said earlier in this year that Hashem told Moshe, don't just write the episode of Amalek, tell Yehoshua orally. Part of our oral tradition is not only the words, but the nekudos. By the way, the Shlach HaKadosh writes, I wasn't going to mention this, but it's coming up, something unbelievable. Yeah, you know, remember when you were in Cheder, every nekuda has a gematria, has numerical value. I think we spoke about this a long time ago.
What is it?
Okay? Every dat?
Yeah, it's
what's a dat?
It's a yud.
It's a yud, right. A dat is a yud. It's a little tiny thing. It's 10. A patach, it's a patach, it's a vav, good. A patach is a vav, 6. A kamatz, do you ever see the old ways they made the kamatz? Remember? The old way they made the kamatz, there was a line.
And a dot on the bottom.
With a dot, not with a line, the not like a cross. Bottom, yeah. They remember the old kamatz was like this.
A vav and yud.
A vav and a dot, a yud. So you say, who cares, a patach or a kamatz? It's a big difference. You know, all the, in the sodos, in the hidden traditions, a patach is a vav, is 6. A kamatz is 16. It's an added little dot. So even though you think, oh, what's the big deal? No, we maintained for 3,300 years a tradition that even though you would think it's vayivash, it's vayivash. Who knows why? You know, who knows what the significance of that is, but it makes a difference. It makes a difference. Okay, Shkayach, thank you for coming. Thank you for listening.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.